Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 12:58 PM. That is Pacific Standard Time. Today is December 14th. I thought we'd kick off with the total return on the 10-year Treasury future. And it has been going sideways since March and spent a good part of last week below the trend mean and is pushing back up again now. Well, this has been one of the most rewarding asset classes anyone might have ever wished for over the course of the last 30 years. The total return index started off in 1983, and since then it really hasn't done anything but rise. There was a really marked loss of momentum for a few years before 2019, and then it just broke higher again. So certainly, there is one way of thinking about this. It might be the last hurrah for the bond market, or it may simply be what it looks like, the resumption of a secular trend. But one thing that we can certainly say is that in order to clearly demonstrate that the bond bull market has in fact ended, it will need to at least sustain the move and then break to new lows below the trend mean. There was a time back in 2013, during the taper tantrum, that bonds did pull back and they did sustain the move below the trend mean. And it could have then been the end of the bond bull market, but that was not to be the case. And since then, we've seen a really significant resumption of the bull market. So now when we think about, well, what happens next? Is there any possibility that there could be another taper tantrum? And I think that is, obviously to have a taper tantrum, we would have to have some tapering. And that just does not look like a realizable possibility. When we think about just how much debt is outstanding, and we think about what the challenges are in trying to get the global economy back on a solid, sustainable, self-sustaining growth footing, then the prospect of raising interest rates before there is clear security in reaching a conclusion that that has been achieved looks rather unlikely. 10-year Treasury yields continue to hold below the 1% level. There's the other way of thinking about it then, is that governments can't possibly tolerate the yield above the highs posted back in March. When we think about the quantity of debt that's been taken on this year and what an increase in servicing, in the cost of servicing that debt would represent, then the potential is that governments can't possibly allow yields to rise. And in the event that they do begin to rise, well, then central banks will have to step in. And that's creating the clear relationship between the monetary and fiscal authorities. Whether it is done by choice or by necessity, the reality is that it is extremely likely. The fact that Janet Yellen is going to be taking over as the US Secretary of the Treasury basically ensures a very cozy relationship between the monetary and fiscal authorities in the USA. But outside of the USA, it's also worth remembering that central bank independence is a relatively new phenomenon, and therefore it's not at all beyond the bounds of possibility that people will just give up on it and go back to government diktat in terms of central bank actions. Now, when we think about the stock market overall, there is this question that is outstanding. When are we going to get additional liquidity? So the first vaccines are being rolled out and the stock market has paused. It reversed an earlier advance to finish in negative territory for the S&P. The NASDAQ biotech index had popped on the upside in here today, but then wasn't quite able to hold all of that advance. It was being driven higher by Alexion, which is being bought by AstraZeneca. So that's a really quite impressive breakout, and it does suggest that there is still capacity for large M&A activity within the pharmaceutical sector. Of course, what it also suggests is that AstraZeneca is beginning to look beyond the coronavirus question. They have been highly active in trying to produce a vaccine. There have been a couple of instances where it's been a bit ham-fisted, but the reality is that by the time we get to the end of 2021, then a lot of the activity in developing vaccines will have moved into the background, and the rest of the sector will have to start thinking about what else they can do to generate money. So the fact is that focusing on rare diseases might be a way of commercializing a significant, or at least animating the very significant steps that have been made towards CRISPR and then gene therapy overall. It's a lot easier to get these kinds of treatments permissioned for rare diseases where there isn't an already functioning solution. So that's probably the rationale for why AstraZeneca is moving in to buy Alexion. When we then think about what is likely, well, when we think about the NASDAQ 100, the market was at a new high this time last week, and it's now pausing in the region of the peak. Europe is definitely taking aim at the big European tech companies, and they are looking at taking significant chunks in the form of windfall profits from companies like Google and Facebook and Microsoft and Apple. And they, of course, represent big targets as well. So when we think about the likes of Apple, it had a downside Q reversal 4 days ago, and it is looking like it may be representing a peak of near-term significance. We may even see a reversion back down towards the mean. And for a company of this size, that would be a significant weight on the wider market. But then when we think about companies like Microsoft, which has customers everywhere, the potential for profits on profits to be taxed in Europe, that also is likely to represent a headwind. And when we then think about how much benefit these companies garnered from the coronavirus and the stay-at-home orders, and the fact that it is very unlikely they're going to be able to grow at the same rate next year, but that they now represent much bigger targets for government, and particularly governments that are running big deficits and badly in need of additional sources of revenue, then it is quite likely that we're going to see some of these companies at least pausing. That, at least at the very minimum, suggests that there's going to be some rotation. One thing that I thought was interesting is in looking at the constituents of some of these very highly publicized ARK ETFs, well, Tesla tends to pop up a lot, and so does Square. In fact, in any one of their big companies, or in their big ETFs, it's either Tesla or Square is the largest constituent. Well, Tesla is obviously a high growth company, and it's also extremely highly levered, but it was in additional positive territory in here this week, or at least today. And the one thing that it has going for it is it's not likely to run into money problems anytime soon. With over $14 billion in the bank, then they have at least a couple of quarters that they will be able to persist. And they're in a positive free cash flow environment. And obviously, they want to try and continue to do that. And it is trading on an extraordinary valuation. But the question of solvency has certainly been pushed off into the off onto the horizon. Square has been one of the most successful new fintech companies. Now, it isn't quite as mature a company as Tesla is, but it is in free cash flow and has been producing free cash flow for the last 3 years. The fact that they are moving into different areas of the online marketplace and supplying companies with very seamless infrastructure for both taking and making payments is certainly working out for them. And then the fact that they are increasingly allowing people to transact cryptocurrencies over their network is certainly pointing towards their leadership in points, at least, of innovation. But of course, the other big point is that neither Tesla nor Square are likely to be the subject of windfall taxes in places like Europe or elsewhere in the near term. That's much more going to be a factor for the kinds of companies that have got cash flow in the orders of hundreds of billions. And certainly, when you've got that much cash sitting on the balance sheet, then it does become a target for governments. Bitcoin has rebounded from the 18,000 level. It's coming back up into the region of the peaks. This hasn't looked like much more than a consolidation in the region of the big psychological 20,000 level. I continue to think that it is the logarithmic scale chart gives us the best perspective on the currency. This is not the first time that we've seen a 3-year consolidation. What I find really quite interesting is that it peaked in December of 2013 and then it broke out in the latter stages of 2019. So, or excuse me, 2016 and early 2017. So we had 3 full years of consolidation. Now we saw the last peak in 2017 in December, and now 3 full years of consolidation. And then it did break out in January of 2017. The halvening event that really animated investors happened in the middle of 2016. The halvening event on this occasion happened in the middle of 2020. So we do get a halvening every 4 years. It tends to bolster the limited supply argument and really encourages speculation. That's, I think, one of the important points about the Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies is that they're magnets for speculation. Not necessarily because they are really stores of value. Stores of value tend to increase during times of stress. Then it's rather the opposite with Bitcoin. It tends to go particularly wild during times of excess. Then when we think about gold, well, the price was in negative territory today, and it is coming back down towards the region of the trend mean. At $1,828, then vast majority of gold miners are really very profitable. But the gold miners index has now encountered resistance in the region of the trend mean, and it still has the sequence of lower rally highs. So this corrective phase is not over yet. Now, that doesn't mean that this is a terminal event, but this was weak in here today and it is pulling back. But when we think about the valuations on gold miners, I really find it difficult to question what kind of way of valuing the companies that investors are really looking at. When we think about some of the larger miners, not without even really going into the bigger ones, sorry, into the smaller companies or those that are really growing their production. Barrick Gold is a company that has a 50 billion market cap. It's one of the few with a really substantial market cap, and it has a dividend of about 1.63%. But the dividend is growing at 52% per annum. And they are in a position right now where, despite the really incredible challenges of the coronavirus year, that they have been able to grow their free cash flow by in excess of 100%. So certainly there is an argument that when we think about what the potential is for these companies, well, their margins when the gold price is holding and not doing much are likely to accrete. If the gold price were to start to rally, then these gold miners represent very high leverage to the gold price because they're not investing large quantities of money in new mines. The one thing that they are interested in is buying up other mines. So we don't have a lot of investment in new supply, but there is a dearth of it. So one thing that I thought also was particularly interesting is I looked at a number of different charts for gold last week, thinking then about the fact that the central bank buying was negative. Well, that was something that a lot of the bears latched on to. Then we also had the fact that there has been some liquidation of prices or of positions in the ETF. Again, that's only about 4%, but it is a headwind rather than a tailwind. But then we also have that the commodity trading funds, CTAs, gold positioning, has been pulling back. Now, it's pretty much now neutral. But generally, when they go to net short, it doesn't last all that long, and it sets the market up for the next big pop on the upside. So we're not at an extreme just yet, although this chart is a week old. So we may not see a very substantial bounce in the gold price until we get to a deep oversold condition. But the one thing that I do find encouraging is that gold is substantially more unloved now than it was back in August, and that is a time to become more interested in it. Platinum prices continue to hold the $1,000 level. There was an explosion at a refinery in Saudi Arabia today, so that did help to support the oil price, and it's holding around the $50 area, but this continues to look like a recovery scenario overall. The continuous commodity index was in positive territory, and it is now pushing up towards that 440 area, which has been an area of resistance for most of the last 5 years. So I think it is increasingly likely that we're going to see commodities breaking on the upside. One of the better performers in here today was Mosaic, and it didn't quite hold all of the advance from early trading. But demand for potash doubled in the last month. So there is potential here that we are moving into an environment where investors are going to start looking more at commodities for both a hedge and as a source of alpha and total return. Following the big upper dynamic that we had on Friday, we did not see follow through on the upside in here today with wheat, and it has still held that sequence of lower rally highs since October. The big rebound, though, that we saw last week was certainly an indication that we're starting to see support coming back in, but we may see some additional messing around. The Chinese renminbi was in negative territory today, and the Chinese obviously don't want to have a permanently strong currency. It is really quite overbought in the short term, so we may see some consolidation. Then one thing that there is, I think, if we just simply look around the world, the tone of commentary regarding China is becoming much less deferential. And the news stories about everything that China is getting up to around the world are getting progressively more aggressive. And that is, I think, reflective of the deteriorating geopolitical stability that we have around the world. Now, the Chinese stock market was in positive territory, so certainly getting a little boost from the weakness of the renminbi. The Indian market remains a really quite strong area, and it pushed on to another incremental new high in here today. But this has been a very impressive breakout, and it is somewhat overbought in the short term. I think that is a condition we see in the majority of markets. We have short-term overbought conditions and a little bit of uncertainty. Of course, the big uncertainty is in the UK. The FTSE 250 is still holding around the 20,000 level. I remain of the opinion there will be a deal. It will probably be incremental in nature, or really rather limited in nature, and leave plenty of room for future wrangling and reinterpretation. And obviously, then it will also allow for some wait and see in terms of the relationship, or in how the relationship between the UK and the EU forms over coming years. But every time it looks likely that there will be a deal, the pound steadies. But what the market is suggesting is that it would be hope, would be the triumph of hope over experience to think that we're going to have a deal in the next day or two. Neither party has any incentive to really get a deal done before the 31st of December. And I think it is very likely that we are going to go all the way up to that point before the big decisions are made. And I think with that, I will leave you for today. I'll wish all the best to all of you.